Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. And for people in the United States, happy Memorial Weekend. I noticed around the neighborhood, even though tomorrow is actually Memorial Day, I noticed around the neighborhood there are a lot of people having their gatherings today. And we had our cookout today. So I got to enjoy, I enjoy vegetables cooked on a skewer on the grill. So I had vegetables, baked beans, Ruffles potato chips with French onion dip, and then topped it off with s'mores. So I have a happy belly. And I think we decided we're going to have one more s'more. Yeah, because they are s'mores, right? I want s'more. So we're going to have s'mores. Tonight, after Deanna's final miniseries, we're going to get together and have more s'mores. So, fun having these kind of holiday weekends. We're here now for the Seven Steps to Awakening. And tonight, I will be beginning at quote 765. But before I do that, I am going to play a song. And the song that I have selected tonight is called My Heart is Willing. And the artist is Britt Lay.
Just to love you as my friend, and my heart is willing and my mind's letting go of the fear, the past and the pain. I once decided wrongly and I lost my peace. Let me choose a man to love once again. My heart is willing. Been so long since I last had that feeling. Oh, the light of the life pouring through. As a kid by the river near a meadow, every breath, every moment was new. And my heart was open and my mind was free of the fear, the past and since then I decided wrongly and I lost my peace. Let me choose now to love once again.
I noticed during the song, Lynn was asking some questions. She asked, are there bios for the nominees who are listed? There are not bios at this time. We have a two-step process. The first is nominating people, and then the second step is the election. And when we get to the actual election, then there will be bios available for you. But during the nominee process, there are not. So I hope that answers your question. All right. So as I mentioned, we're here for the seven steps to awakening. And the quote that I am starting with tonight is 765. And this is quote 765. I am not a wave, I am the ocean. When thus the truth is realized, the waveness ceases. I am not a wave, I am the ocean. When thus the truth is realized, the waveness ceases. And, you know, this is obviously the example of the waves to the ocean are an example that I have seen many times from many teachers. So I go with the assumption that you all are also familiar with that analogy. And the interesting thing about a wave, if you pay attention to a wave, you know, if you watch the ocean, you know, waves rise. And they appear for a time, and then of course they fall away. Depending on the weather, and maybe even depending on where you are in the ocean, sometimes they crash against the shore and they end kind of violently. You know, like maybe where there's cliffs, they like crash against the cliff, and that's the end of the wave. And sometimes they just kind of, you know, just kind of come up in a very gentle way, and then that's the end, right? So, you know, there can be a gentle end to a wave, or there can be a crashing end to a wave, just like there can be to our apparent lifetimes, right? Sometimes there's just this gentle ending to a lifetime, and sometimes, you know, it could be in a car crash or something. It can seem much more violent. But, you know, if you really watch a wave when it ends, you might notice that it doesn't actually end. That's the funny thing. I mean, the wave ends, but the water doesn't disappear. The water is just, again, part of the ocean, which it actually always was a part of. If you watch a wave, you know, where does the wave end and the ocean start? You know, there isn't a separating line there, right? So the wave actually always was a part of the ocean. It's a temporary appearance that kind of rose up as a wave, but then when it ends, it just kind of goes back into the ocean. And in fact, you know, you could say, and more waves are born of the same water, right? The same water molecules even sometimes, I'm sure. So the longer you watch the ocean and you really contemplate this analogy that people have of the individual with the wave, the more you realize that even though waves are great fun to watch and they're great fun to surf on and they're great fun to dive into and and all of that, they really are just temporary appearances. And, you know, what really matters, what really is at the heart of the matter, is the ocean itself. Welcome, Jamie. Hello. Jamie has come in for the teaching. So it seems to me that even though, you know, we appear to have this individuality right now, it seems to me that it is most helpful to continue to focus on the oceanness of our waves, to continue to focus on, you know, the life isness awareness that is always present, that is the same in every wave. And not only that, you know, I'm reminded of something that Adyashanti said once. When he was talking about the practice of awakening, he said that what we're practicing for is death. which I know that's not an exciting thought to a lot of people. I just smiled really big if you'd seen me. I smiled really big, but it's not an exciting thought to a lot of people. What we're practicing for is death. But if you go back to the wave analogy, again, some of the waves maybe crash up against the shore and that's how they end. Some waves maybe kind of gently roll in and that's how they end. But all waves end. But what doesn't end is the ocean. That's how we want to experience death. And it doesn't really matter if we're talking about physical death or ego death. Die before you die. Doesn't matter which one comes first. When death comes, we want to experience death by being focused on that which doesn't end. We don't want to be focused on the individual, whether it's the individual ego mind or whether it's the individual physical body, the temporariness. We don't want to be focused on that. We want to be focused on the oceanness, the awareness, isness, presence. And when we go through a death experience, regardless of the kind of death experience that it is, we want to notice there is no change. There is no change in the awareness, isness, presence. That it's the ocean. It's what we are. The wave is not what we are. And even if we do not get to something in the near future, as dramatic as physical death or ego death, we usually have the opportunity to practice with lesser kinds of death. Some of them may still seem somewhat extreme. For example, one type of death that we all get the opportunity to experience at some time is the death of someone dear to us, even a pet, right? We get to experience other kinds of deaths as well. We get to experience maybe the death of a dream. Maybe we realize something we've always wanted is not going to occur. Maybe it's the death of what feels like an ideal situation. I mean, shoot, even going to a spiritual retreat and, you know, we can get all peaceful and just feel all joyous at a spiritual retreat. And then it ends and we go back to the workaday world. There was a death of the spiritual retreat. You know, maybe somebody breaks into our house and steals what we perceive as our valuables. And there can be the death of our relationship with those particular material items. Maybe our lover leaves us and there's the death of that relationship. Maybe our child or our parent for some reason gets upset with us in some kind of a family squabble and there's one of these I disown you type things and they don't speak to us again and there's the death of that type of relationship. You know, there's just so many opportunities for death in this ever-changing world. Which means we have lots and lots of opportunities that we can use to focus on the changeless isness, awareness, presence. And to notice that although there may be death after death after death, wave crashing after wave crashing after wave crashing, that the ocean is always constant. And then as Adya Shanti said, as we experience these, I'm going to call them lesser deaths, even though they may feel quite dramatic, as we experience these lesser deaths, we are preparing for true death. And true death isn't even the physical death, although the physical death can be quite dramatic. True death is the death of the ego. Even the physical death is not a final death, right? With a physical death, the experience of the ego continues in different form. The ego death is the only final death. In the book of Revelation in the Bible, it's called the second death. Because after the first death, there can still be a resurrection of the dead, In this case, we're not talking about the resurrection of Jesus, the Spirit. This is a resurrection to still a worldly life, a resurrection to still the opportunity of judgment, right? It's just the resurrection. We would call it reincarnation, more likely in our spirituality. But in the Bible, it's called the resurrection. There can be a death, and then there can be a resurrection to judgment. That can, you know, but then there's the second death. And the second death in the Bible, that's the end of the ego. And in fact, after the second death, that's when all of the tears, there's no more tears, all of the tears are wiped away, all of the suffering ends forever, and there's only bliss forever and ever and ever. That's after the ego death, the only truly final death. So as we practice focusing on the ocean, focusing on the isness awareness presence, we are preparing ourselves to go through the eye of the needle. We are preparing ourselves to experience that ego death, and that can be, from what I understand from those who have gone through it, that can be quite a dramatic experience. There can be a lot of fear. I especially love, and I've done this with you all before, I especially love to listen to David Hawkins' description of the ego death. There's a couple different very brief, like 5-minute YouTube videos that you can listen to. One is called The Final Doorway, and the other one is called The Final Door. It's just two different events where he really described the eye of the needle experience, you know, the ego death experience. And I love listening to him describe it because he does it so well. And he talks about how there's this extreme fear, extreme fear. But he also talks about how, you know, in worldly time, it only lasts a couple of minutes, you know, so it's this extreme fear. And you need to be able to watch that without getting caught up in that and stay focused on isness awareness presence. So as Adyashanti says, we are preparing for death in our spiritual practice. And then what happens when that wave crashes, when the ego wave crashes and ends? Then there's only the ocean, right? Then there's only the truth. Then there's only spirit, whatever words you would put to that. And that is what our quote is pointing to. Let me go back and read the quote to you again. I am not a wave. I am the ocean. When thus the truth is realized, the waveness ceases. The waveness ceases. There is only the isness awareness presence after that final ego death. Now I'm going to go and see what I wrote in my journal for 765. And I don't think I've given you all a link to the journal yet, so I will do that. It looks like I wrote this on January 2nd, 2014. Oh, I may not have logged in. I did log in as admin, so we're okay. There you go. That's the link if anybody likes to read along in the journal. And so the journal entry says, "This idea, I am the mind, is a persistent idea. I notice how much I believe it. Even the I in the above sentence is mind. Mind believes. Awareness does not engage in believing. Awareness is the light that allows believing. Without awareness, nothing could be perceived to be believed or not believed. Awareness is clearly primary and mind is secondary. Why does my identity rest with the secondary instead of the primary?" Yeah, there's a lot of talk about awareness. If you spend any time listening to spiritual teachers at all, I'm sure you've heard talk about awareness. And talk about awareness can be helpful, you know, because talk about awareness is pointing. You know, first of all, let me just take a little break and tell you what else I did today besides having a cookout. The other thing that I did today was, one of the other things that I did today was I watched Peaceful Warrior, because tonight is our movie discussion group. And I've seen the movie many, many times before, but I just wanted to refresh one more time before tonight. And so one of the lines in Peaceful Warrior is that there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is doing it. Right? There's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is doing it. Well, that applies to the point that I am about to make. You know, there's lots and lots of talk about awareness, and we can listen to all of the talk about awareness. We can think about all of the talk about awareness. We can talk about awareness. But there's a difference between the knowledge of awareness and wisdom. Wisdom is doing it. In other words, wisdom is becoming self-aware of awareness. And the way you become self-aware of awareness is to pay attention to awareness, to examine awareness. You know, in fact, Michael Langford has an example, I suppose, an analogy in both The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss and in How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And that example is watching awareness like you might watch a person that you are falling in love with. You know, you don't really know the person when you first start going out with them. You know, you may be attracted to them, but you don't really know them. And so you just keep paying attention to them. You know, and you probably pay attention to them in a lot of different ways. And we're talking about a person. You pay attention to their, you know, physical mannerisms. You pay attention to what interests them. You pay attention to how they respond to things. And so he uses that example, and he recommends that we pay attention to awareness in that same way. You don't know awareness yet, but you pay attention to awareness. And as you pay attention to awareness, you get to know awareness better and better. And one thing that happens when you pay attention to awareness is you get to see clearly the difference between awareness and the mind. You get to see how the mind, you know, you could say behaves in different ways, and how awareness is always constant. In fact, you get to see that awareness does not behave, right? Awareness just is. Awareness does not react or respond. Awareness just is. And the more you pay attention to awareness, and again, even paying attention to awareness and noticing the difference between awareness and the difference between mind, the more you also come to realize which you are. You know, it appears, if we don't pay close attention, it does most definitely appear that we are the mind. You know, if the mind whispers, you know, oh my God, I don't like this, and we feel that emotion of, oh my God, I don't like this, I just hate having to go listen to the seven steps, not that you have to, but I just hate having to go listen to the seven steps on Sunday evening. There's got to be something better that we could do with our time. You know, if the mind says that, then you feel it. You believe it. You think it's true, right? That's the way we all are with the mind. Whatever the mind says, we tend to believe. And so we think we are the mind if we aren't paying attention. But if we sit quietly and we pay attention to the mind, and we pay attention to awareness, the more we pay attention, the more we pay attention, the more we pay attention, the more clear it becomes that we are not the mind. That the mind is a separate chattering object. and that what we are is the awareness that is aware of the mind, unaffected by the mind, always present and always peaceful no matter what's going on with the mind. Right? The awareness is here when the mind is chattering like crazy about something, but the awareness is also here when the mind stops and drops into absolute silence. And so back to the statement that I borrowed from the Peaceful Warrior, where there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom, because wisdom is doing it. In this particular case, that would mean that with so much talk going on about awareness, instead of just listening to the talk and talking the talk, actually taking time to pay attention to awareness, doing it, that's wisdom. Getting to know awareness, as Michael Langford recommends, like we might get to know a new lover, by watching it. And so what I see in this journal entry that I made in January of 2014 is that I was watching awareness and paying attention to awareness and getting to know awareness. You know, I started off, of course, this idea, I am the mind, is a persistent idea. I notice how much I believe it. So still noticing that if the mind says, you know, oh, I hate doing dishes, then of course I have that feeling that I hate doing dishes. I assume I hate doing dishes because the mind had the thought and I'm, you know, believing the mind, believing I am the mind. But during the quiet time of contemplation, there's a looking at that. There's a paying attention to that. And there's a noticing first, a noticing of the believing of the mind. This idea, I am the mind, is a persistent idea. I notice how much I believe it. And then notice how the looking goes deeper. Listen to this next part. Even the I in the above sentence is mind. Even the I in, I notice how much I believe the mind. That's not awareness. So as I sit looking at awareness and I sit looking at this idea that I believe the mind, you know, I become connected in the quietness to the fact that what I am is awareness. And I realize I'm not even the I in the sentence, I believe the mind. That's not even true. I mean, that's a nice step back. It's nice to start with such honesty. Oh, I see that I'm believing the mind there. I see that's why I got upset or that's why I got afraid because I believe the mind. But then further looking, wait a minute. What am I? Noticing that I am awareness and I do not believe the mind. Even the I in the sentence, I believe the mind, is mind. In fact, again, the journal entry says, this idea, I am the mind, is a persistent idea. I notice how much I believe it. Even the I in the above sentence is mind. Mind believes. So you see how clear we can become on what we are and what we are not if we take that quiet time to really just look, to practice wisdom, actually doing the looking, and not just talking about, oh, I know I'm awareness. You know, Muji said it, Adyashanti said it, I know I am, I heard them say it. But to go in and notice for ourselves, with a genuine, direct experience of seeing what I am and also what I am not. The journal entry continues, awareness does not engage in believing. And this can be seen as clear as day if we just take a pause and look. We can see that the mind engages in believing. Awareness does not engage in believing. Awareness does not believe or disbelieve. That's the mind. Here I wrote, awareness is the light that allows believing. And I can see how another way that I might write that, in fact, probably the way I would write that today, is awareness is the space that allows believing. Because awareness does not interfere with believing. Awareness does not interfere at all. In fact, I've often compared it to the space in the room. You know, this space in the room, it doesn't interfere with the fact that I am sitting here teaching the seven steps. The space in the room is totally okay with that. You know, it's not, the space in the room is not a Baptist or some other religion. It's totally okay that I'm sitting here teaching the seven steps. But the space in the room would be totally okay if for some reason I decided I was sick and tired of my dog and I decided to hurt Jamie. The space in the room would react the same way as it is now with me teaching the seven steps. And then, of course, if I was all remorseful and I started trying to repair whatever damage I did to Jamie's body, the space in the room remains the same. And then if I became very insane and decided I was a horrible person for hurting my dog and began to hurt myself, the space in the room remains the same. And then if I have some kind of an ego breakdown in that moment of insanity, and it happens this way sometimes, and I have a complete awakening experience, right? Out of complete madness into complete awakening, the space in the room remains the same. And this is how isness awareness presence is. It is the spaciousness that allows the believing at the level of mind. It's the spaciousness that allows not believing at the level of mind. It is beyond both believing and not believing. It is beyond both, dreaming and awakening. So awareness does not engage in believing. Awareness is the light that allows believing. Without awareness, and this is why I used the word light, I think, that day, without awareness, nothing could be perceived to be believed or not believed. And in fact, let me go right into the next two sentences before I talk. Without awareness, nothing could be perceived to be believed or not believed. Awareness is clearly primary and mind is secondary. Why does my identity rest with the secondary instead of the primary? So, again, the misidentification is with mind or with body-mind. Right? That's the misidentification. But in sitting and really paying attention to awareness, really paying attention to mind, really paying attention even to body, what I notice is that without awareness, there could be no mind. There could be no body. You know, it's often like some masters will describe, without the screen, there could be no film, right? The film has to be, the movie has to be projected onto a screen. Without a screen, there could be no movie. And they say consciousness is like the screen. Well, without awareness, there could be no mind. There could be no misidentification with mind. Without awareness, there cannot be sleeping, and without awareness, there cannot be what we call the experience of awakening. Awareness is primary. And this becomes so incredibly obvious with just a little bit of looking. So if awareness is primary, or we might even call it foundational, if awareness is primary or foundational and is clearly what I am, right? I mean, clearly when you look, that's what you see. Then why do I step into identifying with the mind, the secondary? Again, you know, to quote many, many masters before, You know, it's like the screen identifying with the film, with the movie that's playing on the screen. It's just a misidentification. So the only thing that's really going on in this journal entry as I contemplate this quote, 765, is this actual looking, this actual investigating of awareness, and this actual investigating of who am I for myself, rather than believing other teachers who say I am awareness. It's going into that investigation. So I'll read the quote in journal entry one more time, and then we'll move on. The quote, number 765, I am not a wave, I am the ocean. When thus the truth is realized, the waveness ceases. And so then I go within and I begin to look at the ocean, or I begin to look at the isness, awareness, presence. This idea, I am the mind, or we could say I am the wave. This idea, I am the mind, is a persistent idea. I notice how much I believe it. And then further looking happens. Even the I in the above sentence is mind. Mind believes. Awareness does not engage in believing. Awareness is the light that allows believing. Without awareness, nothing could be perceived to be believed or not believed. There's no film at all if there's not a screen. Awareness is clearly primary and mind is secondary. Why does my identity rest with the secondary instead of the primary? So again, that was my looking that day as I contemplated this quote. So now I'm going to move on to quote number 766. The mind itself appears to be the object of perception, just as in dream. The mind itself appears to be the objects of perception, just as in a dream. One thing that I think is really interesting, you know, I love meditation now. And I find that each day's meditation experience is really unique. And one of the experiences that I have sometimes, and this would be when I slip out of awareness, watching awareness, and slip into paying attention to the mind, that it happens. But one of the things that I notice happens when I do that is how alive the inner screen can become. You know, like I don't remember any specifics now because I let go as soon as I notice they're occurring, so I'm just going to make up a story. But let's imagine that I'm slipping out of awareness, watching awareness, and slipping into watching the mind, and the mind begins to tell a story about a red Chevy in a parade, a red 1957 Chevy Bel Air convertible in a parade. And pretty soon, you know, with the eyes closed, sitting still on the sofa, there's this vibrant parade. You know, there's this red Chevy in this parade, and then there's this little boy with this balloon, and then the balloon gets let go, and it's a yellow balloon, and the yellow balloon is floating up into the sky, and the little boy is crying, and then there's an awareness that I've gotten lost in the mind, right, and a waking up that happens, and I quickly return to the awareness watching awareness. But there's always this amazement with me about how, you know, in just a few seconds of not paying attention, how the inner world became so vibrant and so alive and so independent. I mean, you know, this inner film starts running, and I'm engrossed in the inner film. You know, where does this inner film come from? Well, clearly it comes from the mind. In fact, the more I see the mind through meditation, the more amazed I am at how I don't know what word to use. Complex comes to mind, but not only complex, but amazing. I mean, is there a word where you put complex plus amazing together? I mean, there's just so many passageways in the mind, so many thoughts that can come together to create so many different scenarios and so many different stories. And what you can see, you know, if you pay any attention to the mind at all, what you can see is that the mind can go on forever and ever and ever and ever, creating completely new circumstances. I mean, you know, maybe in some ways they're not completely new. You know, like a parade is a parade, and a boy losing a balloon has happened before. But yet it can come together in these unique ways that aren't quite exactly the same as any other time, and the mind just keeps creating and keeps creating and keeps creating, and it's rather amazing. And what I see is that if we continue to give the mind attention, this dreamlike creative process we'll just go on and 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 on. And, you know, I have to stop at some point, so I'll stop now. But and on and on. And I also see that the mind knows exactly how to interest us. You know, it knows exactly how to pull us in. And this isn't only true in meditation. This, what this quote is saying is this is what the world is. You know, the world is the outward projection of mind. And it can go on and 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 on. So we can't wait for the mind to stop its projecting in order to become genuinely interested in truth. Because that end is never going to happen. It's never going to come. If we say, you know, I've got this thing going on in my life right now, and it's pretty important. You know, I need to pay attention to this thing that's going on in my life right now. But, you know, within 6 months, within a year, I should be past this. And when I get past this, then I'm going to start spending more time in, you know, meditation and contemplation and, you know, focusing on truth. But right now, I've got this thing going on. If we do that, well, then when that thing ends, the mind knows how to create the next thing. And the next thing. And the next thing. Yeah, mind and ego here are synonymous. So we can't wait for the stories to end or for the stories to come to what we perceive to be a happy conclusion, and now I have the space to give my attention to truth. Instead, we have to realize that the truth is present now, and we start giving our attention to truth right now, even while the story is running. And not only that, as we give attention to the truth, a detachment from the story becomes born. Because as we begin to see with clarity, with honest, genuine direct experience clarity, that what we are is the isness awareness presence, then even if the story at this point is continuing for us, there's a detachment. People often call it equanimity. Because we begin to genuinely notice ourselves as that which is not affected. And then we're able to be in the story or be with the story in a different way, in a non-reactive way, while maintaining our beingness, our awareness of our truth. And I'm going to look at my journal entry for 766. First, let me read the quote again. The quote was, "The mind itself appears to be the object of perception just as in a dream. The mind itself appears to be the object of perception just as in dream." So the journal entry says, "The mind is highly individualistic and it cannot see or understand perspectives beyond itself." The mind is highly individualistic and it cannot see or understand perspectives beyond itself. If I am the mind, I am the individual limited by my own restrictive seeing. Is that what I am? So again, what's happening in the journal entry is that I'm looking. I'm sitting here looking. I'm not philosophizing. Is that the right word? I'm not philosophizing. I'm looking. You know, let's say that the mind had an opinion about my neighbor. You know, I don't know what that would be. I don't actually have an opinion about my neighbor. But let's imagine the mind had an opinion about the neighbor. I'd have to make one up. So let's imagine that I perceive my neighbor as sneaky. Let's imagine that I perceive my neighbor is watching me. You know, and I don't know why, but, you know, obviously I don't like it. But then I'm setting down into more of a meditative, contemplative state, and I'm now looking at the mind, and I'm noticing the mind's opinion about the neighbor. But I start looking at that from a detached perspective. And I start noticing that this mind has a definite opinion, and it can chatter on and on and on. It has its stories. It has its remembrances of what it's seen the neighbor doing that comes together to create this story. But as I'm sitting in a more contemplative state, I start noticing that I am able to see the mind, and I'm able to see the insanity of the mind. And I'm able to see that the mind is interpreting certain events in certain ways that aren't necessarily true. Well, then what am I? You know, the mind doesn't have this perspective. If I'm not in a place of paying attention in the way that we do when we're, you know, in a more contemplative state, or if we're in the habit of mind watching, right? If I'm just out there in the world, in the life, you know, I'm believing, oh, my neighbor, you know, I saw him doing this and I think he's sneaky and I, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, when you're completely in the mind, you don't have the ability to see that the mind is incorrect. You don't have the ability to see that the mind is interpreting. You don't have the ability to see the mind is making things up. So when you do have the ability to see that, you have stepped out of mind. You're looking at mind as an object, just like you might look at a book and be able to see the book and have thoughts about the book that you're reading. So what am I when I can look at the mind from that broader perspective and see the mind acting like the mind and realize that it's not at all correct in any of its perceptions? I think the word that people often put to that is awareness. I'm awareness. I'm aware of the mind. And so that's what's happening in this particular journal entry. Again, the the quote is talking about how the mind is the object. And what's happening is there's a scene of that going on in the journal entries, that the mind is highly individualistic. I mean, I still seem to have the mic from my end. Is it still dropped for you guys? Okay, now, all right. So it's just pal talk coming in and out, I think, is probably what you're experiencing. Yeah. Yeah, just pal talk being pal talk. So what I was noticing on January 2nd when I was looking at the mind, and I don't know what stories were going on in my mind on January 2nd, 2014, whatever they were, I was noticing that they were, you know, you could call them Regina life stories. Like if Carla's here in the sanctuary, if Carla had been at my house in a different room, you know, and her mind was chattering, her mind would have been chattering about something different, right? Carla's in one room with her mind chattering about one thing, and Regina's in another room with her mind chattering about something different. So the mind in that way is highly individualistic. And so I was noticing that what's going on is are what I'm going to call Regina stories. They're Regina character stories. But I noticed that I was seeing this. I was seeing the Regina character stories. And I was seeing that, you know, whatever was going on that day was just being interpreted or was just being made up and believed. I was seeing that I am not limited by that Regina mind, by that Regina chatter. So if I am not limited by the Regina mind or the Regina chatter, am I the character Regina? What am I that can see beyond the Regina chatter, beyond the, quote, Regina mind beliefs? I'm going to go on. We have 8 minutes left, so I'm just going to move right on to 767 and see how this continues. And all of these are on the same date, so all of this was happening, all this contemplation was happening on the same day. Here's quote 767. The physical or material universe does not exist at any time anywhere. The subtle body itself appears to be the solid body on account of the notion of such solidity arising in it repeatedly. Its very source is unreal. And again, you know, when I'm doing my contemplation of the seven steps, I'm not at all interested in believing the seven steps, the quotes. You know, I've watched course students for so many years read the course and believe it mentally, intellectually only. Of course, you see people doing the same thing with the Bible. And, you know, it's always been pretty obvious to me that believing a spiritual teaching is nothing. I mean, it's nothing. And so when I sat down with the seven steps, you know, some of these quotes are, you know, quite incredible. Like the quote that I just now read about, you know, the material universe does not exist at any time, anywhere. And, you know, I can be like so many other people and I can say, oh, yeah, there is no world, blah, 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 you know, blah, 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 at a believing level. And that's nothing. I'm interested only in the direct experience that comes from my own investigation and my own insight. So let's see what I did with this quote. Okay, so what I did with this quote is I looked at nighttime dreams. I sat and contemplated a nighttime dream. And I wrote, when I am awake, I know the images in my dream did not exist. They were images made up by the mind. When I sleep, I do not know this. And then I simply asked a question. Does the world seem real solely because I am not awake from my identification with the mind? and I left it as an open question. Is it true? How can I find out for myself? How can I investigate this teaching that the world does not exist at all and it only appears because of identification with the mind? Now, the answer does not appear in this particular journal entry. In this particular journal entry, it is an open question. I'm going to peek and see if it shows up in the next journal entry. No, it doesn't. And I don't want to go into the next journal entry now because that kind of goes in a slightly different direction. So there's not an answer that appears on this day on January 2nd, 2014. And I can also tell you on January 2nd, 2014, I don't think I was meditating. Nope, I wasn't meditating yet. I would have started meditating in May 2015. So I'm still a year and a half away from meditating. I'm only contemplating at this point. But what has brought me to meditation as something that I do very seriously now is really still this question. You know, there's this, I mean, I know some things from my own experience. You know, like I know I don't have to get angry from my own experience. It's not just that I read in the course that anger is never justified. You know, I have learned how to watch my mind. I've learned how when I believe things, I respond. How when I don't believe them, I don't respond to those thoughts. You know, and I know that I don't have to get angry. And I rarely do. I won't say never, but rarely do. And when I do slip, I'm able to recover very quickly. Right? So there are things that I know from my own direct experience, from my own spiritual practice, not because I read them in a book and believe them. So what about what I'm going to call the highest of spiritual concepts? At least it appears that way to me. The highest of spiritual concepts, that there is no world at all. How do I test that for myself? And the only answer that I've come to at this point is the only way to test that for myself is through meditation. There's just this feeling that it's the going within that will take me to the point of seeing that the world is not real. As a direct experience. So again, we have a great quote here, a great teaching. The physical or material universe does not exist at any time, anywhere. The subtle body itself appears to be the solid body on account of the notion of such solidity arising in it repeatedly. Its very source is unreal. Do I just believe that, and do I go around like so many other students saying, the world is not real, the world is not real, even though, of course, as soon as something goes wrong in my life, I freak out. Do I do that? Or do I take this as a truth, I'm going to call it a possible truth, since it's not directly known yet, as a possible truth from what appears to be a very reliable source, from someone that I have a sense of trusting, and investigate it for myself. Find out. Which one is wisdom? So again, the journal entry is, when I am awake, and again, this is referring to the nighttime experience, when I am awake, I know the images in my dream did not exist. They were images made up by the mind. So I know the mind can do that. And in fact, we even talked earlier in the hour about how even during meditation, the mind does that, right? But when I sleep, I do not know this. I don't know the images are made up. So I know the mind has that capability. I experience it in sleep. I now experience it in meditation. I've experienced it in daydreams, staring out a window, right? does that actually apply to what appears to be the physical world? Does the world seem real solely because I am not awake from my identification with the mind? Let me find out for myself. All right, that's it. I'm done. I'll see y'all in our movie discussion group.